a very good Thursday. Thurby fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com as well. Thurby arrives, and right now, very pleasant and a little breezy, but also a little foreboding because there's going to be weather, and there's no denying. Saturday feels like the better of the 2 days, clearly, but there's going to be rain that's going to move in late tonight. Let me check again for those of you that are looking seriously at the forecast. As early as 7 o'clock tonight, this from Dark Sky, as early as 7 o'clock tonight and continuing essentially till as late as 8 a.m. Saturday morning, off and on, and periods in terms of intensity, mid-morning, late morning tomorrow, and then it reverts to light rain, and then after the race day, looks like it clicks up a little bit. There's no way of knowing, because this is as crazy and as volatile an area when it comes to weather as you're going to get, but I think you can count on a certain degree of moisture on the main track tomorrow. When it comes to the turf, it's a little early to know how they're going to handle that, and we'll just we'll play it into tomorrow. When it comes to the non-stake portion of the schedule tomorrow, there's a race that starts the early, well, the second pick five. There seems like there's one every two races, but the third race tomorrow is a turf allowance, a mile and an eighth on grass, and you would think if we're getting much, that might be threatened. But other than that, the two races after the Oaks tomorrow are on the main track, and then on Saturday there is a turf allowance scheduled as the third. So really, only two non-stake turf races are on the docket. So it doesn't feel like, even if we get any significant rain, that it will tear things up too badly. The turf races, I wouldn't worry for a second about the turf stakes coming off. That won't happen. It doesn't look like a forecast where you're talking inches of rain, but for the main track, you'll get some wet. The amazing part, of course, about this main track is how it dries and how it takes a licking and keeps on ticking. The morning was a little quiet and pretty sedate, and there were a lot of gallopers that went out early sessions this morning, including the Pletcher team. Pletcher bypassing the gallop opportunity, 7:30 to 7:45. There were plenty of spirited gallopers, and I put up a couple of video snippets from where the last few mornings I've watched from essentially the eighth pole, and Cyberknife, just on a daily basis, has looked really good. And today, I thought Simplification got stronger and stronger, as I wrote, got stronger and stronger as the morning progressed for him, second time around, and then into the backstretch, off the, as he was finishing up, he was rolling, and they actually kept the camera feed. You may have seen this on the work show today, the last of it, and the great job by Joe Christofek and Scott Shapiro and everybody that contributed. And he was tough to pull up Simplification, and then didn't want to go off the racetrack, which is always a terrific sign. And as I wrote a little bit ago, is he good enough? Does the race unfold in a way that he can impact significantly? That's up to you. Won the Fountain of Youth, and was as game as Dick Tracy, as they say, in the Florida Derby. You get Jose Ortiz, and you're probably getting over 20-1. I, you know, you've heard me talk about him from early on, and I'm hard pressed not to have him on tickets, and probably even, you know, even a win bet at that price. Just too inviting. Epicenter was out earlier in the morning. Did not see him live. Mike Welsh said he went. You know, he went and went around and did what he had to do. The other players that let me see who else I Cyberknife. I wanted to make sure to mention Simplification and the two McPeaks were out. Smile Happy, a horse that got better the longer he went. Actually, second time around, and that's not, you know, that's not unusual. I did not see him getting warm, which has been a bit of a dialogue here for the last couple of weeks. On the Philly side, Cocktail Moments continues. I mean, that at some point, maybe today, when Nick Tamaro joins us in about 40 minutes, I'll have that. We can have that conversation a little bit. Horses that kind of moved up on the, you know, on the rankings, and horses that, you know, just have been too impressive. And of course, that list starts on with the boys with Crown Pride, but there's some others, and Cocktail Moments has just captured my interest as well. And tell you who also today was notable, and I didn't get the I took about six little videos, and I've got to go back and look because I'm not sure if I got her or not, but Desert Dawn, who Steve Anderson alerted you to last Friday when I asked about her, she looked good today. Really first, you know, the West Coast horses and the Florida horses, you don't have, you know, the breadth of observations that you have on the ones that have been here, you know, for 10 days, 2 weeks. But when you get to see them, that's why, you know, that's why you look forward to seeing them. Desert Dawn, you know, with all the potential price opportunities, that no matter how you're looking at the Oaks, because what's so difficult about the Oaks, the Oaks now has become as difficult or more difficult than making the final ticket building decisions for Derby. It's very difficult because, you know, much like actually Johnny discussed yesterday, you're not looking to just, you know, put together the four favorites. It just doesn't seem like that's not just, you know, the best way to make a score here. I mean, there's 14 fillies lining up, but you know, when you're getting horses like Nostalgic at 15-1 and Venti Valentine 20-1, Desert Dawn 20-1, Cocktail Moments 30-1, Shahama, who became a real fancy in her time here, 15-1. Yeah, if you're in love with Secret Oath or Nest or Kathleen O or Echo Zulu, you know, you want to build a ticket that absolutely can put some spurs to the bankroll. So the Oaks, I'm literally as eager to hear finalized opinions today and tomorrow about the Oaks as anything. And I do have to mention this because I started writing my page up for Friday, and I will, especially given the opportunity today, I am going to do everything I can to get both days, all 27 races, written up and posted, and then I'll fill in with comments and more, you know, the ticket structures and so forth, you know, from that point on. But I do want to get the, you know, the most likelies, the best values, the, you know, the top four laid out. And I hope to have that by early evening. All right. So, and I'll tweet that out. But if you check at the website or at Derby Trail, you you could very well find it. I've got to mention the of all the races for Friday to have written up per se, and I just made a one line comment about the 12th race. Forget the Oaks. As I wrote, come for the Oaks, stay for the incredibly interesting 6.5 furlong, 3-year-old filly, first level allowance that goes as the 12th race at 6:25 after the Oaks. Absolutely fabulous. This is the race, if you think back to Gabby on Tuesday, and there was a absolute outpouring of appreciation for the Gabby and Andy Talking Horses Redux on Tuesday. But, you know, she talked about on the ones and twos, and she, I'm glad she did. Drawn Outside is part of an entry from Norm Cassie. But you get Arat Ortiz, you get first Lasix, and she is going to set up shop in the open air outside box where the air is fresh and clear. And this race is absolutely terrific. George Weaver's, there's three horses in here, three fillies, that were first out winners, two of which are making seasonal debuts. And George Weaver's got that Wish You Well, who's 9-5, and rightly so. But how about 8-1? And I think they're both 8-1, or is one of them 6-1? Angitude is 6-1. For Brad Cox, but Society, this is a filly that Steve Asmussen got his hands on from Wayne Mackey, a first out winner, and comes back in this spot 8-1. Okay, thank you. I'll bite. Cherie's got Reagan's decision down on the inside. She's got a little bit of a tough assignment under Louis Saez, but she's eligible. It is a fabulous, fabulous allowance race. I mean, this thing could easily. You know, these fillies, then there's quite a few in here with stakes experience, including Cherie's Reagan's decision. This was the one her sister picked out that was a first-out winner on Boxing Day at Fairgrounds. So, I mean, this is the kind of weekend we're going to have, that you've got as terrific a race as there is on the card, other than the Oaks, as the 12th. Unbelievable. Should be just great fun. And Nick Tamaro has mentioned, Nick will be here at 9:45. Gosh, and we're already in trouble here because I got a full docket. Andy Beyer is going to join us in a couple of minutes here, literally in 2 minutes. And Tom Law will sit in as well in probably the bottom of the hour. We'll have a lot of 15-minute kind of windows. Hour two, probably Nick will carry into hour two a little bit. Satish Sinan, as promised. And Satish, with his, typically what he gives you is the Oaks, Wood, I'm calling it Woodford, and that's a disservice to Old Forster, who has become the sponsor of, with Woodford Reserve becoming the Derby sponsor, Old Forster is the Turf Classic sponsor. So Satish typically gives you those three races. He'll give you the go after those three opinions. All right, so we'll get that from Satish. Steve Haskin. We'll get Haskin's final thoughts ahead of Derby at his usual 10:30. I thought Lenny was going to be here live. Lenny actually is on the vets list and is not making it over here this week, but we'll try to feather Lenny in with Haskin. Darren Rogers and Davis with their traditional Derby visit. And this may be Davis Rogers' last Derby. He may be... Maybe matriculating into the Oaks as soon as next year, I think. I think he's moving on from Derby visits. He was wavering this week. Let's do this, and there'll be some others. I'll probably get one or two of the DRF people in today. I'm going to guess maybe Nicole Russo. We still have to hear from Jay Privman and Dave Grenig, and I haven't seen Marcus at all yet. So we'll catch up with the DRF team between today and tomorrow. The couple of news pieces I want to slip in here, right? The case, let's reach for Andy, and we'll get Beyer in. And there's a couple of things that I do want to get to. And if I don't, I know if I don't do them now, I will miss this. The docket. I hope people saw in the Blood Horse just the heartbreaking and at the same time sweet and just remarkable comments of the parents of Callie Witt. And they had a statement of sorts that expressed just incredible appreciation for how the industry, the outpouring for Callie and her tragic death last week at Keeneland. And I'll send a link to this up on Twitter, because you really need to read it. Her parents, and you can tell from her father's comments, her father clearly is a horseman himself, and you know, they're cognizant of the dangers, but this is something that she loved from the time she was old enough to be asked to get on a horse, and literally, you know, died doing what she loved the most. It's very, very difficult. The parents are created a Callie Witt Memorial Fund, they're also asking if you'd like to give to the Jockey Club Safety Net or to Bluegrass Farms Charities. I'll send out all the information, but you know, just more thoughts and love to Tim and Jennifer Witt and their family. Got some other news that we'll get to, including a bad situation in Erie, Pennsylvania. And, in fact, Erie, Pennsylvania, look who pops up like a genie when I mention Erie, Pennsylvania.
I see. What's happening in Erie?
Well, there's a situation, the Presque Isle, the horsemen, the HVPA, and Churchill are at odds, and this goes back to, in fact, even before the contract that was in place when Churchill bought Presque Isle, and then it expired, and there's some real wrangling. They expect to have it nailed down and wrapped up for next week. However, there is no simulcasting, as of Monday, no simulcasting at Presque Isle, and it does not look like those that were hoping to go to Presque to bet the Derby, you're not going to get that signal the way it looks right now. You can use your ABW.
This is Churchill's doing.
It's at the heart of things. It's their contract negotiation for the contract with the horsemen, and they're wrangling obviously over percentages. And
Churchill just never wants anybody to make a nickel except themselves, in my opinion. But that's another subject.
Yeah, I know. This one will play out, and there hasn't been a lot written about it, but it's going to come to a head certainly tomorrow and Saturday when people were hoping to bet Derby. They can use their ADW, but you're not going to be able to bet at the racetrack as of right now. But you've been gone from Erie a good long while.
Yes, and in truth, I'll never go back. Two places that I can say with confidence that I will never see again in my time on Earth: Erie, Pennsylvania, and Louisville, Kentucky.
That's basically my halfway point from driving here is Erie. So I love it. Andy, it's that time. It's Derby opinion time, and We do have a little bit of weather to deal with, but I think by Saturday, 6:30, we'll be all right.
Yeah, I was just looking at the forecast today. It looks like Oaks Day could be a real washout.
It could be wet.
There are so many unknown elements, in the Derby, and so many horses I look at, and I say, I just can't quite get a handle on this one. Then to have, like, a rain and a sloppy track where almost nobody has any form would just make it a little too difficult.
Well, assuming that and the way this track takes moisture is about as good as any oval in the country. How did you view this coming up to the race? And we did, we did have checkpoints along the way through the winter, as we often do, mostly to talk about figures and interesting performances, notably Taba. What were your thoughts as this field went to the draw?
This looks like it may turn out to be quite a good crop of 3-year-olds. But at this stage, there's nobody that I have real confidence, making that statement about. I mean, I'm just too much of an old timer who remembers when horses, had a dozen starts going into the Derby. Now you look at horses with 4 and 5 race careers and, before the Derby or less, it's hard to gauge them. I mean, I think Epicenter is a case in point. I think this is going to turn out to be a quite a good horse. I was looking at him throughout the winter, and thinking, well, this is the kind of the solid favorite or a legit favorite for the Derby. And as a handicap, he's had. His last two races, he's got figures of 98 and 102. Makes him a prime contender. Well, he won the Risen Star, loose on the lead, then came back in the Louisiana Derby. Two horses went out and dueled in front of him. He sat on the rail on a day when I thought the rail was a little bit of an edge to boot. So he's won two races with perfect trips. As his main claims to fame. I mean, could he be very good? Yes, but boy, I don't want to take 7-2 on a horse off two perfect trips going into a field of 20. And I feel kind of wobbly about a lot of the other contenders too.
Well. Then who do you want with him?
Well, the horse I want in here, and for a couple of reasons, is White Abario.
Hmm.
I think he's kind of just gotten lost in the shuffle here.
I agree.
Partly because there are so many. You look at the trainers, in this race, Pletcher, Asmussen, Chad Brown. It's the who's who of the sport. I mean, we who pay attention to Gulfstream know how good Saffy Joseph is, but I doubt that 1/10 of 1% of the population could identify him. So I don't think I think because of the relatively obscure connections. Why DeBario won't get much attention. But look at what he's done. I mean, I thought that the Holy Bull, which he won by 4 lengths, was as good a prep race as any of these horses has run. I mean, leaving aside maybe Taba, whom I've already talked ad nauseum about on a previous show. But, White Abario, beat two horses, Simplification and Mo Donegal, who both came back to to win major prep races for the Derby. We gave the race a figure of 97. It was, I mean, Gulfstream has just been a confounding track this winter. You know, half the races have no times, no posted fractions, and you know, a changeable track. I think we were low on that figure. I think based on the way the horses have run back, you know, White of Barrio's best race is certainly on a par with Epicenter and a couple of the other top ones. He's probably going to be 10-1. So for value and just basic handicapping dope. I mean, he's the horse. Now, anybody listening will know that the chances that I could pick two Derby winners in a row, let alone, you know, like two 10-1 shots in a row, are infinitesimal. With Medina Spirit last year, I think I used up my handicapping fortune for probably another decade or so. But if I'm not cursing White of Barrio, I think he's certainly a real value.
Well, you know, he came here, you know, a little bit late with the simplification, and of course the West Coast horses as well, and just seeing him physically, he. I, when you say he's a horse that kind of has gotten shuffled down the pecking order, I completely agree. And he cuts an impressive swath, to be honest. And he's the horse that I hadn't really considered seriously, who scares me the most.
Yeah, and also, you know, I always pay careful attention to Mike Welsh's workout reports, you know, particularly in the week of the Derby. I mean, it's just an invaluable tool. I mean, if you're playing the Derby or just playing in general, that's such important information. And when, I mean, he gave White of Barrio a rave review, that bolstered my confidence a little.
White of Barrio, some Epicenter, and who'd you turn in on your third?
Well, I don't really believe in him, but Zandon. I think he is, as little Andy would say, a little bit dressed up. his bluegrass was good. He got a figure of 98. That was a day at Keeneland where every race was won by a horse coming off the pace. He's won one stakes race in his life, in his four race career. I just don't see him as a Kentucky Derby favorite. I mean,
interesting.
Chad Brown, he could win. I was really kind of stunned to see him the top choice in the race.
Anybody for the Oaks, Andy? How closely have you looked at tomorrow's feature?
Well, you know, I'm now distressed by
the weather.
By the weather. I mean, I thought that. That Kathleen O was super impressive when she won the Gulfstream Park Oaks, she'd never run a race that big before, figure wise. But Chug McGee, he is, you know, is a trainer who doesn't rush him. This horse has been improving step by step, I saw this horse at an overseas betting line at like 5-1. I think she's very formidable. And the one to beat. So, you know, I, I mean, I have to respect Echo Zulu, and she's perfect. She's a champ, but you know, she still hasn't run. I mean, she hasn't run a figure as good as Kathleen O. And I think Kathleen O. is the one to beat.
Can't beat Andy Byers' analysis and visits. Erie's own Andy Byer. Andy,
you'll never let me let that down.
It was just the natural. How could I miss that? That was just that was hysterical. Thanks so much, Andy. Good luck this weekend.
Good to talk to you, Steve. Okay.
Andy Byer, Jay Privman. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Steve?
I'm excellent. As we wind down and build up and look forward, and about as good a follow-up to Andy Byer as we can produce here. Looking forward to your final thoughts on the weekend.
Yeah, Andy and I did a webinar last night that seems to have been well received. So it was fun. Hashed over the field, and hopefully one of us will be right.
Well, that means you're not picking White of Barrio.
Not picking White of Barrio.
Jay, let's start with Derby, and we'll come back to Oaks, which, of course, is kind of threatened now with what is probably going to be a wet surface. But, coming in, your thoughts and any morphing or any movement since we've arrived here?
Well, the movement since we've arrived here for me would be on Crown Pride, who I was fairly dismissive of before getting here, but he's trained as well as anybody, if not better. So he is a horse that I've upgraded in my opinion of. So that's been the one sort of revelation, I would say, regarding the Derby, would just be the chances of Crown Pride. Everything else has kind of been in line with a lot of the thoughts of people who have read the analyses that I've done of all the different prep races and seen who I've liked or not liked. There's been nothing that's happened here that's dissuaded me from the top contenders. Zandon, Epicenter, Simplification, are all, and Cyberknife are all horses that I've been high on. As you know, I've been a really big fan of Zandon since the since the Remsen, and he's done everything right as far as I'm concerned coming into this race, including the way he's trained. So the only thing that's not appealing about him is his price.
Exactly. And one of the interesting things about the way this field came together and ended up being launched from a morning line standpoint is you've got the favorite that's going to have to negotiate, who knows, 13, 14, 15 horses to pass, and then you've got Epicenter, who's going to be in the vanguard.
Right, and I know some people thought, Epicenter getting post three is might be challenging. I actually like it, because to me, it's you don't have to think about what's your strategy here. You go, and considering that Summer is Tomorrow is next to him, and he's fast, and you'd think that Classic Causeway is going to be forwardly placed from his wide draw. It's not impossible that Epicenter could fall into the same kind of trip that he got in the Louisiana Derby, where he's sitting inside, just behind some of the speed. So, to me, you might as well just go from down there and try and establish a position early on. And he's trained extremely well, as you've seen from the comments that we've had in our stuff, especially Mike Welsh's workout reports each day. So, and yet overall, though, Steve, the one thing I was going to say, I think this is a really good field. I think this is a well above average group of 3-year-olds. Normally at this time of year, everybody's poo-pooing, oh, this crop's terrible, and then by the end of the year, it's like, hey, they weren't that bad, were they? But this one, you don't really hear that much that often, and I'm glad, because this is an above average group, I think, and they've on the whole they've performed well in their preps. The top contenders have held their form for months. We're still talking about the same horses by and large that we were at the beginning of the year in a lot of cases, with Zandon and Messier and Epicenter. These were horses who in January were on everybody's short list of top Derby contenders, and here they are at this point in time ready to go.
That's a fair point too. And when you use the point system and the rankings, and you know, you were watching and seeing if the field was going to morph at all, it really was very static. I mean, there was some movement at the bottom and Classic Causeway, you know, coming back in, but there really was very little that went wrong, really, for anybody over the last month.
No, after we got through the last round of preps, it's pretty much stayed intact in terms of who the top contenders were. And, you know, like you were saying, other than maybe Unoho's defection.
Yeah, it was too bad.
Yeah, felt terrible for them. But there really weren't a lot of absences from who it looked like the field would be three to 4 weeks ago.
Well, then rank them. How are you betting this, Jay?
So, rank them and betting them are two different things, as you know, because you can rank a horse, but then look at a fair odds situation. So, in the racing form, I picked Zandon on top. I picked Simplification second. I picked Epicenter third and Cyberknife fourth. And if I had a fifth spot, I would have put Crown Pride, but
sure,
we only had top four. But in terms of wagering, I'm going to fool around in gimmicks with those four, and I may end up making my win bet on Simplification if he's in the 15 to 20 range, because I think his value and chances in relation to Zandon's are not going to be five times worse. So that's... that's the way I'm looking at it at the moment. I thought he ran a sneaky good race in the Florida Derby. I just couldn't quite pull the trigger on putting him on top. I just have been a big fan of Zandon's, and I came here wanting to maybe pick against him just because he seemed like everybody was on him, and I like to go the other way when that happens. But he's just trained too good to get off of him at this point, and he's got, as far as I'm concerned, the best rider in North America on his back.
You mentioned that, like so many of us, Crown Pride has wormed his way into everyone's consciousness, Jay. And yeah. You've been doing this how long?
My first Derby, Steve, was in 1982. And I took a photo that Amy Zimmerman was here at that Derby, took a photo of me with the Twin Spires in the background, and I took another one this morning. I'm going to put it on Twitter later, it started, how it's going.
That's
so
cool.
So it was 40 years ago. So I've been to 39 of 41. I missed the last two, but 39 out of 41. So I've seen a few of these, yes.
Do you ever remember a horse doing this and just
yeah, Master
wow.
Fencer and Lonnie.
Well, but no, not. But yes, in terms of the not frenetic, but the full frontal assault on the training front.
Yeah.
But he, those two, Lanny, I guess to a degree, wormed his way into people's hearts. This horse really has captured people's imagination.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it just has to do with how impressive he's been in his training. You know, Lonnie and Master Fencer didn't train like this horse did. They had the extensive types of training that this horse did in terms of all the figure eights that he does warming up and all the time that he spends on the track and the elongated gallops and the frequency of workouts. But in terms of how well the workouts were, this is a different horse compared to those other two.
How do you think he performs? It feels a bit of a mystery. I mean, people are talking about the left lead down the stretch at Maidan. Is this a board hit or 17th? I mean, what do you make of it?
He's more a board hit than 17th for me. He's trained like he's going to run very well.
Yes.
And he's changed leads in his works.
Yeah.
I didn't like the lack of the lead change in the UAE Derby. I didn't think the UAE Derby was that strong. I thought he kind of inherited the win because Summers Tomorrow just couldn't stay the trip. But he's been very impressive here. And like I said, when I first came here, I was thinking he's just going to be
auto toss.
A toss, and he's not for me now. He's just trained. You can't. That's one of the things I know. You and I have talked about this over the years. I love when people in January say, "Who's your Derby horse?" And like, I never buy into that because it's like, no. Many things can change. over time in terms of prep races and development of horses. You don't want to be locked into a horse that doesn't progress and feel like you're obligated to stick with some horse that you made had a liking for 4 months out. There's no other race that anybody asks you 4 months beforehand, who's your horse in the, you know, Breeders' Cup Classic, for instance, you know, in August or July,
yeah.
You know, who's your classic horse? That doesn't happen. And I'm using that as an example of Crown Pride. I think you have to be nimble in terms of your handicapping to trust, if you've been doing this a while, your observation and knowing what it takes to win this race in terms of how a horse needs to be coming up to it. And he ticks all those boxes for me. He's a serious horse. I don't know if he's going to be good enough, but whatever he can do, he will do Saturday based on what I've seen of his training.
Notable, given your base and your understanding of California racing and the California-based competitors when it comes to the classic trail and the sophomore scene. Your final thoughts on Messier and Taba coming in?
So, you know, as you know, I was really poo-pooing Taba's chances into the Santa Anita Derby and thought he ran a remarkable race that day. You know, I'm skeptical of him being able to do that again twice. But the other thing that I think is really going to be challenging for him is he's going from a six-horse field where he had the outside box in the Santa Anita Derby. He got to sit a perfect trip behind Forbidden Kingdom and Messier. And sure, it was a great achievement to go from 1/6 furlong maiden race and beat those horses. But going from that six-horse field with an ideal trip to what is going to he's going to encounter on Saturday is a whole other beast of a 20-horse field. So I've got to take a position against him, even though I completely understand why he's in here. You've got to go after you win the Santa Anita Derby. Messier is a tough one for me because I thought he got caught up chasing Forbidden Kingdom last time, and it might have weakened him enough for Taba to beat him. But the thing that I'm on the fence on him, but I ended up being less bullish than more bullish because to me the two times that he really was asked to have to be in a dogfight, he surrendered. In the Los Alamitos Futurity against Slow Down Andy, and then when Taba beat him, he did run a freakishly good race in the Robert Lewis. He got a giant figure that day, but that field he was supposed to do that against that group. That was not a good group. So I ended up being taking a position of trying to beat both those horses just because there's others in here who I just think are better candidates and quite frankly, in many cases, are going to be better prices.
There it is. The long and winding Derby trail leads us here, and Zandon on top for Jay with some simplification, Epicenter, Cyber, and Crown Pride, if you're playing the Super High Five. Jay, listen, it's a betting
extravaganza.
Exactly. Yeah. If they formulate bets for five places, people want to know who our fifth horse is.
I'm happy enough if I can hit an exact in a
20-horse
field because it's 380 combinations. So if you're right, you're still going to get a nice payoff.
Exactly. That's the way this feels. Yeah. Jay, how about the fillies? It's a wonderful Oaks. I mean, people are as excited for tomorrow as anything, and the weather may put a little bit of a damper on it.
I'm all in on a horse that I hope I'm the only one on your show who mentions this horse. I love Shahama. Her works have been phenomenal. There's pace for her to run it down. She's going to get overlooked in here. I think there are a number of horses in here who are going to be shorter prices, who are vulnerable. The exception being Nest, who is a legitimate favorite for me. I have no problem with her. I could see Pletcher running 1-2 in here, but Shahama's going to be 12-15, and I realize that we don't know what she was beating in the UAE, but her works here have been incredibly impressive, and she hasn't lost yet, and I'm hoping she can keep that win streak intact tomorrow.
Well, and it's funny you phrase it as, you know, not knowing what she beat, because when I asked Todd Pletcher about her you know, a couple of weeks ago after the Mo Donegal Wood win,
right.
Todd said, well, she looks like a horse. She seems kind of nice. We have no idea what she is, and we'll try to get to know her.
I mean, she worked in company with Goddess of Fire the other day.
Yeah.
And was much best, as to my eyes. And I think there's pace in here that could set it up for her. And again, here I'm looking at a Pratt sweep of Friday and Saturday, perhaps. Yeah,
ooh.
I've got I'm in on him and on both races.
Good
as
point.
as it turns out. But I think this horse is worth the gamble. And I think there's, like I said, I think there's pace, and there's a couple in here that I think are going to be shorter prices that don't have to be in the gimmicks. So that's where I'm at.
I like it. Any other coverage opinions that popped up over the course? No, just
no,
the two.
Just,
that's fine.
That's all. I mean, I'm going to obviously handicap the entire card, but as you've seen from our website, we've had a few stories to write.
Yes.
So I've just sort of been head down on these two races, and the Derby, obviously, you know, much more so. But I'm looking forward to digging in and really trying to formulate some strategies for Friday and Saturday.
Outstanding. Jay,
thanks for sneaking me in today.
This was perfect.
I have one other question.
Yes.
Where are the donuts?
Yeah, you blew it yesterday. I had a six-pack just for you, three
glazed. How many? I can't eat six donuts. You're trying to, well, what are you trying to do to me?
And what about
going to Sugar Shock?
What about the private box I gave to
Marty? We divvied them up among the racing four people. And I might add, we're incredibly appreciative of the gesture.
but not the consistency.
Anyway, you still haven't answered my question. Where are today's donuts?
There are no today donuts.
My God. What a sad, sad day this will be now. Well, I'm going to try and go forward anyway, Steve. So
gather yourself.
Yes.
And there you go.
All right.
I will. Maybe I'll sneak six in tomorrow.
All right.
A six pack.
All right, that'll be good. A six pack of donuts or a six pack of beer?
Donuts.
We're gonna be hunkered down in here tomorrow.
Exactly. By the way, I was gonna tag you, but you got enough nonsense to deal with.
Yes.
The picture I put up of the Daily Racing Form wallpaper.
Oh, I saw that. That was quite good. I like the photo you had of all of us from 10 years ago in the press room.
That was
pretty cool. Yeah,
and that was with my crappy first phone camera. I wish, because it's not clear. It's a little blurry. It's
all
like,
right,
you know. But
good. Then nobody can see how much I've aged since then. So that's good. I'm glad it was blurry.
You look the same.
Yeah.
Blow up that. It's very funny because if you blow up that picture of of the paper.
Uh-huh.
There's a headline story by you. There's a piece by Marty. There's a piece by Mike. It's unbelievable. That's in the wealth. That's in the Wilkes's powder room.
Nice.
I get the big. I always say I'm going to put this picture up. Now a bunch of people are asking where they can get that wallpaper.
Nice. Well, you might have to go into the wallpaper business, Steve. You could be the middleman.
That's a good idea.
Can I interest you in some wallpaper today? All right.
Jay Pridman, everybody.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you for all the escort work through the crown season. It's been great, Jay.
My pleasure.
Let's get
lucky.
Let's get lucky. Let's have a safe Derby and Oaks and weekend. Jay Pridman, everybody. DRF Pridman with the whole team. Let's turn to our Friday analysis and pull out your Oaks paperwork. That's what I'm going to do. You can hear in the background that Nick Tamaro is driving somewhere. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm super, and we're rolling here on Thurby, and I want to, you know, we've been doing this for a number of years in terms of trying to do the Friday card on Thursday and the Saturday card on Friday. So everybody will have a chance to listen. And do we want to work backwards from the Oaks, or do we want to waltz through the card? How do you want to attack this, Nick?
Sure, we can go backwards from the Oaks through the graded stakes. The Oaks is obviously the centerpiece of Friday, and we don't have to get too much in detail because it's certainly been discussed plenty, but the weather is expected to be a little rough on Friday. Hopefully not anything too significant, but I think keeping in mind, at least handicapping 36 hours in advance, that you want to deal with potentially a wet track. This is a fascinating Oak, Steve. I'm very, very taken by this field. I think it's very interesting. I thought that the workout report, which is available on DRF on Nest, was not it wasn't bad by any means, but it seems as if she may have been training a little bit better prior to the Ashland. She's still training well, but you know, the question becomes, as far as betting the race, whether you want to take a swing against her. I don't think she's going to quite be her morning line. I don't know if she's quite deserving of morning line favoritism, but she's a horse I think that you want to give yourself some other options, and I think there really are other real options coming into it. I'm not terribly fazed by Kathleen O. Apparently not training that great. Apparently that's generally the case with her. But I have to say, I really like Secret Oath in this race, and I think she's kind of slipping under the radar a tad, and I'm not exactly sure why, because you know, a month and a half ago, she would have been considered a really solid Oaks favorite, and I don't think the Arkansas Derby was the type of race that you should hold against her. I think she benefits, obviously, from moving back into restricted company, and I feel like every way this race looks, it sets up well for her, because you have Yagiri and Echo Zulu next to each other, who should make sure that there's an honest pace, and I think things set up well for Secret Oath, who now probably won't have to make a five-wide blitz around the far turn, and hopefully Luis Saez can keep her in a comfortable spot early. So she's my top pick. I'm going to use Echo Zulu as well. While I really have no... everybody seems to be taking a big stand against Echo Zulu. I thought she looked like a horse who probably needed her last race and won it on sheer determination alone. And, you know, until dethroned, she's still the queen of this division, even though I think her rivals may be getting closer to catching up with her.
Anybody among the prices, Nick, that you think can either, you know, just boost an exotic or potentially upset?
I think the most embraceable is Hidden Connection. She seems pretty obvious getting back to the site of her best effort, and I thought her Fairgrounds Oaks was solid. You know, I think that she probably caught Echo Zulu on a day where Echo Zulu didn't exactly have her fastball. So, you know, I think in a way you can kind of say to yourself, well, if she didn't beat her that day, I don't know if she's ever going to. And she's now 0-2 with no real apparent excuse either time. So she'd probably be my likelier long shot. I do think Desert Dawn is worthy of some consideration as well. I think the California form has been a little too generally poo-pooed, and I don't really think that it should be. I thought she ran a game race to beat Adair Manor last time, who, of course, at one point looked like she was going to be a major contender for this race. So I think Desert Dawn rates to get a pretty good trip from just off the pace as well.
There you go. So 1-7-3-9, let's call it, in the Oaks. All right, we'll come back to the 12th because I thought it was a fascinating group. But let's stick with the stakes action. The Turf Sprint, the Twin Spires Turf Sprint, the 5.5 Turf. These are the 3 and ups. It starts the last pick 4. And certainly some familiar, you know, names in here. And there's actually a couple of potentially live prices. I struggled a little bit with this on Wednesday when I did it. I'm still going to have to come back to it and make some final determination.
Yeah, it's a very, very tough race. And, you know, the first concern I had was whether there really looked like there was enough pace on paper. And I think as you dig into the field a little bit more, while it may lack that breakaway speed horse, I think there are enough horses that are going to ensure that it's a pretty honest early gallop. A lot of that will depend on how aggressively Arrest Me Red is ridden, but, you know, Just Might only has one way to go, and Johnny Unleashed being on the outside of him, you feel like he's going to apply as much pressure as possible right from the start. I ended up picking Diamond Oops, who is a horse that I've really never liked, and I'm a little surprised that I landed there, but, you know, that Shaker Town was so dominated by Golden Pal and was such a merry-go-round, and Diamond Oops was really putting together the only real late bid. You know, Gear Jockey and Diamond Oops are the only horses that really passed anybody the entire way, and they did so in a, you know, more or less meaningless way, but I do think Diamond Oops came from a big disadvantage being as far back as he was. Opening weekend at Keeneland, it felt like there was a real premium on getting close to the pace. I'll tell you the other horse who I think is extremely interesting in here, Steve, is Caravelle. And Caravelle was expected to be a blue-chip turf sprinter last year when she went into the care of Graham Motion, and she failed. And, you know, with all due respect to Graham Motion, who's a Hall of Fame caliber trainer, sprinters are not his game. he is a more classic type trainer. He's a route oriented trainer, and so it's really no surprise that Caraval went bad. But they paid $500,000 for her at the end of last year, and coming back and winning that race at Turfway. I know it was against females, but she completely dominated the race. She looks like a horse who really benefit from getting back to the turf. And Brad Cox is 41% synthetic to turf with a 264 ROI. Those are not Brad Cox-like numbers. He has a lot of positive ROI stats for a guy who wins as much as he does and whose horses get bet. But she's very interesting to me because she's going to get that type of trip, similar to what she did when she was really good back in the beginning part of last year. And as far as any concerns about wet turf, arguably Caraval's best race was the Hilltop as a three-year-old at Pimlico, and that was run over a complete and total bog during the rescheduled mini Preakness meet at Pimlico in October of 20. So I don't have any concern whatsoever about her handling a turf course with moisture. I'm going to try and keep it simple here, and where everybody's going to go deep, I'm going to mainly focus on Caraval and Diamond Oops.
I like it, and I still have determination to make. Let's talk about the eight bells, the grade two, the 7/8 group, and this is the start of the late pick five, the last pick five. That includes the two non-stakes after the Oaks, and there's some interesting participants in here, including Chad Brown with Gerrymander's return, Pretty Birdie in here for Norm Cassie, and of course Matarea, who was a romping winner last.
Yeah, it's a fun group, and you know, I've always enjoyed this race. I love Cutback this time of year because Connections are finally taking their medicine and realizing what their horses probably are. One thing I think you can definitely say about this race is it feels like it's going to be run at an honest early pace. Pretty Birdie only knows one way to go. She's drawn inside, and she has the other main speed right to her outside in Marissa's Lady. So I think there are also a couple outside of them that can force the issue a bit early. So I do think it's going to be an honestly run race. You know, this is a situation where the more speed figures you dig into, the more you realize that Gerrymander was fast enough as a two-year-old to win this race now. And there aren't horses in here save Matarea, who basically had, you know, has had two unbelievably good trips pace-wise in a row. There are horses that have really not shown they're much faster than Gerrymander's best race last year, which was Attempted. And Gerrymander really didn't run poorly in the Frisette at all, being second to Echo Zulu. So she's going to be very tough to meet. And at her around that morning line of 8-1, I think she's extremely interesting. I also like Ain't Easy, who I think is a really ideal cutback, broke her maiden sprinting, likely ended up winning a grade one as a two-year-old simply out of talent. She was helped a bit by the track profile that day, too. But I don't think she's embarrassed herself now in a couple of starts at three, and I don't really think she's gotten the best run of it either time either. So she seems like a really interesting cutback to me, horse who probably benefits from going 7 furlongs. I don't want to be beaten by Pretty Birdie. I thought her last race was excellent. I do think she's a little vulnerable at 7 furlongs, and I think if she takes any heat early, that could make things quite a bit tougher. I wouldn't exclude Matarea either based on that last performance, but I just feel like Gerrymander and Ain't Easy are a little bit more interesting maybe for those A slots at better prices.
I've got to mention, because you brought up obviously the Phil D'Amato, the Into Mischief filly, Ain't Easy, 12-1 coming out of the Santa Anita Oaks. What about Awake at Midnight for the Redhams and Doug O'Neill, whose best race came at 7/8? I think she's as live as can be at 15-1.
Yeah, I picked her fourth. You know, I could have mentioned her. She's a horse that I think is another ideal cutback candidate. And, you know, these are the kind of horses that you want to bet cutting back because they've been one pace going long and they just don't seem to have any punch. Now, last time out, Awake at Midnight was pretty bad, but I don't really want to hold that against her. It was obviously her toughest engagement so far, facing Nest in the Ashland. It will. The only concern to me is that it does look like she's on a little bit of a backward slide, but that could be attributed to maybe running the wrong distances. So, yeah, I'm interested as well, and she's going to be a very nice price.
Backing up, one of my favorite three-year-old races of the year of either sex is the Edgewood, and this is always an important, mid-spring springboard to bigger and better things as the summer unfolds. Talk about the eighth, which starts the all-stake pick four that ends with the Oaks.
Yeah, no Aunt Pearl or newspaper of record to be upset in here, but boy, Steve, I mean, doesn't Chad Brown looks like he's going to run 1, 2, 3 in here. I mean, his horses just look like they're better. than what they're facing. I don't know who is supposed to stand in the way of Spicer, Dolce Zell, and McCulloch. I don't love Dolce Zell's last race. I thought she had a really good trip, and she had an excellent trip to win the Florida Oaks as well, and came up short. But Cinderella might be the best three-year-old filly turfer right now of all. And,
yes,
you know, the main competitors for these three Chad horses are the 1-3 finishers from the Sanibel Island at Gulfstream, and those two horses were split by a 99-1 shot. So, I mean, they're not coming out of a good race at all. I probably prefer My Filly Twirl a little bit to Beechnut Trophy because she can be a little bit more forwardly placed. This does not look like a race that's overloaded with speed by any means, but yeah, I picked a 3.58 too. So, I mean, I think McCulloch is going to be the best price of the Chads, and so I would prefer her. She got a terrible trip. She got a bad ride, and she had an unlucky trip last time in the Miss Grillo. She was supposed to win, but she was breaking from the six and ended up getting forced out shortly after the start, lost a lot of ground. And I think Irad thought that she was going to be able to gather them in a lot quicker than she did. That was a very firm turf course early part of the Belmont Fall Meet, and Sail By simply got a huge jump on them. So McCulloch was likely going to be in the Breeders' Cup, but ended up having an issue. Now comes back. Chad's 32% with graded stakes horses on the turf of 180-plus day layoffs, 221 ROI. If you need to be reminded of him winning races like this with these kind of horses, just think back to last year's Old Forester Turf Classic with domestic spending winning off the bench. So I think McCulloch will be ready. McCulloch's debut is still one of the better turf races run by any horse in this race, and I'll take her as probably the third choice of the Chad.
I do want to bring up two price horses that are going to be overlooked, and Knee Ships for Amos and Joel Politti, as well as Brendan Walsh with Mark the Temple's New Year's Eve. They're both going to be in the teens. They both have got some merits to them, and if you are looking for a price, I would look long and hard at both of those.
Yeah, Knees and Hips and New Year's Eve ran against each other two starts back at Fairgrounds, and Knees and Hips got the better of her. They both got a big pace to run at that day and ended up making up big ground to do it. It's just a class test, but I agree. If they're capable of taking that step forward, then I think you definitely could include. And look, if you believe like I did that opening weekend at Keeneland, it was very difficult to make up ground on the turf, then you probably do want to upgrade Knees and Hips a little bit, who finished fourth in the Appalachian, and you're going to get a very, very fair price there as well.
The seventh race, which starts the all-stakes pick five that ends with the Oaks. It's the Ali Sheba, and it may be a place where players get, you know, if they're going to spread elsewhere, this may be a place that they can kind of drill down and tiptoe through to open the sequence.
Yeah, I mean, this looks like a fait accompli. I think Olympiad is an almost cinch here. You know, I have some respect for Max Player, given what he did in the middle part of last year, but that looks like a bit of an aberration to me. Olympiad is clearly the speed. He should be on the lead very easily. I hope that Junior Alvarado doesn't do some of the Junior Alvarado things we've seen in the past and get a little cute and try and find a target, because there is nobody in here that should be in front of Olympiad early. And, you know, Olympiad's only blemish now in a run that goes back to that performance from Baby Yoda that will forever live in infamy is the Cigar Mile, when all I'll say is watch the replay of the Cigar Mile, and if you can figure out what Irad was doing, let me know. But this horse has been razor sharp this year. Very, very good. He's quick enough. And it looks like another race that's going to look similar to the Gulfstream Win and the Mineshaft, where he sits on or makes a slow pace and goes on with it. He went a little quicker early last time and still went on with it very easily. The only concern, the only hole I think you could poke in Olympiad is that he has been treated with Lasix in his last three starts, and he doesn't get it this time. Philmott's winning stakes races with horses without Lasix. It's just not a big worry to me. He's run well without Lasix in the past, too, so I'm not overly concerned. He looks like a horse that you can single safely.
I feel that way, too, and you mentioned Max Player down inside. The horse outside that has actually got performances that could at least threaten Olympiad, I think would be Happy Saver, making his five-year-old debut and seemingly very much poised for this. Then there's Brad Cox, who's just, you know, scary every set of PPs you look at. He's got that Fulsome at 8-1, and Florent Giroux has been getting along very well with him, and he's okay, but they're all going to have to up their game to beat Olympiad, and I mean, I I don't know who exactly is going to take the starch out of him. That's the issue. There's nobody really to, you know, to test him early or often.
Right, that's the concern, is that, you know, a horse like Happy Saver may have to get used way too much to keep up with Olympiad and stalk him and keep him honest. So I have a great amount of concern that he'll be able to do that. Folsom is interesting, and, you know, Folsom, I think, in many ways ran back to his best race from 2021 last time out in the Oaklawn Mile, which first time out as a four-year-old is a great sign and usually a signal that he's ready to take a big step forward. So he is probably, in my opinion, the second or third likeliest winner, but he's going to be a much better price than Happy Saver. So I'd be inclined to use him as a backup just in the event that something goes amiss on the front end with the favorite.
The sixth race, which is the second stake on the card, is the always wonderful Grade 1 La Troyenne, and the fillies and mares go on the mile and 16ths. The two major players are pretty clear in She Dares the Devil and Pauline's Pearl. May not need to go much further. For those that are keeping track on their ticket structure and the betting menu, this race for Friday is the start of the Derby City 6, 20-cent pick 6 that ends with the Oaks. It is also the first leg of the two-day $2 pick 6, which has proven popular since its introduction. So the two Grade 1s, of course, on Friday, the La Troyenne and the Oaks. And then into Saturday, where you fold in the Derby City Distaff, the Churchill Downs, the Sprint, the Forster Turf, and the Derby. Those are the four Grade 1s on Saturday that hook up with the La Troyenne and the Oaks. How deep are we going here in that first leg?
I mean, I think too deep. I think the obvious two, if you have backups, I would say the backup is probably Battle Bling, who's run races, I think, that would make her competitive. She's going to have to take a step forward. The concern here, of course, is that She Dares the Devil might have turned into She Wants to Be a Mama. You know, that's kind of the signal that you see from her last start. She was bad in the Azari. And I know there was sort of that optical illusion in mid-stretch that they were coming back on CC. But She Dares the Devil set a very soft pace. And, you know, if you think about the way she ran in the Azari in 2021 and then put it up against the way she ran in it in 2022, you would say, okay, this is definitely not the same caliber of horse. And, you know, she then came back off of that Azari and won the La Troyenne in an effort that really wasn't exactly jaw-dropping. So she's been a horse that's been in the right place at the right time a number of times. I know I want Pauline's Pearl to win a Grade 1, obviously having won the Houston Ladies Classic, but I thought her Azari was very good. She came from farther off the pace than I would have anticipated. Looked like she was really a real contender in mid-stretch, and I like the way Steve Asmussen is going to mix and match these older females with she and Clairiere, and so I think Pauline's Pearl gets a real opportunity here to take down a Grade 1, and this is probably as soft as a Grade 1 in this division is going to get, knowing that the heavy heads are still out there, like Latruska and Malathot. So I'll use those two. I'll probably back up with Battle Bling in some of the stuff on the day. As far as the two-day pick 6 goes, I can't imagine myself making a big, you know, big ticket with A's, B's, and C, so I would just use the two favorites and hope to get on by.
And when you flesh out the Pauline's Pearl, doesn't this have the similar feel to the Asmussen camp and She's a Julie getting the Grade 1 a few years back?
It does. I always forget that horse's name, and I feel like I'm in a conversation, and I say, that horse that won by a million in the books during COVID. Exactly. Yeah, it feels like she's going to get probably the second-tier races where Clairiere is going to get try to get more opportunities to get her name in lights. But, you know, we've got three Grade 1s left in the older female division east of the Mississippi from here until the Breeders' Cup. So, you know, there's limited opportunity. And this is one where Pauline's Pearl really, if she puts a Grade 1 on her name, obviously it puts increases her value significantly and shows that she's really become an even better horse at four, I should say.
Hmm. Couple of other spots, Nick. Let's fill out the other parts of the card, because there are a couple of short-priced favorites even before that pick 6 sequence. The end of the first pick 5 is the Grade 3 Modesty being moved here from Chicago, and Bleecker Street seems awfully imposing. I mean, there's a couple of horses within the frequency, but Bleecker Street 9-5 for Flavian and Chad.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Bleecker Street's been really good in those two races at Tampa, and almost out of nowhere. You know, it just goes to show you that when you have a far-flung operation, a good horse can start anywhere. You wouldn't have really thought that Bleecker Street was potentially a graded stakes horse when she debuted at Monmouth and made her second start at Meadowlands. But that's exactly where she's ended up, and this feels like a really cozy fit for her. There's not a ton of speed in here, but I really don't think that's a big issue. And I will say that I think the antidote to pace issues on the turf this summer is going to be Flavian Pratt. So I'm very much looking forward to him being in the mix riding-wise in some of these places where we've seen things get a little wonky on the front end. So I get the feeling, not that Bleecker Street's going to be on the lead, I get the feeling she's going to be more forwardly placed than she has been, because that was a much faster-paced race last time than she's accustomed to, and she still finished very well, even despite having to expend a little bit more energy early. So, yeah, she looks tough. Similar situation. Her stablemate is probably her biggest rival. I think Stand Tall is a little interesting at a price. She comes back off a layoff for Rusty Arnold. Some of her better races, including one at Churchill last May, I think they put her in the conversation. She might also be forwardly placed under Florent Giroux, who likes to be on the front end. So she might be one that could stick around a little bit more. Mona Stella is also re-entered in the Churchill Downs just after Turf Mile on Saturday. If she comes out, then I would definitely upgrade Stand Tall and maybe just underneath the favorite in the Exacta, but a horse that you could probably include at a little bit of a price in some of the multis.
Nice. The fourth race starts a middle pick four, or an early middle pick four, the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh, and this is a second level allowance going a mile and a 16th for fillies and mares three and up, and boy, Juju's map, who's beating her?
Looks like it's going to be pretty tough. I would say it's going to be quite a task to beat her. This is a very, very realistic placement off the layoff, and I think that, you know, you're going to see her probably come back a bigger, stronger, better filly. And she was darn good as a two-year-old. So, yeah, she seems to have... I'm sure a lot of the people that entered here didn't expect to see a horse like her coming off of the layoff. But, you know, this is the kind of weekend where you get grade one winners in allowance races. So I imagine Brad Cox has some big aspirations with her down the line, provided she's taken that step forward. So she looks like a horse that's pretty safe to single early on. You know, if you're playing that middle pick four, you probably get bold with she and Bleecker Street and then maybe try and branch it off a little bit from there. But it looks like a pretty cold number given that you have the La Troyenne in the third leg of it and then Olympiad in the fourth leg. It might be one of those 1-by-1-by-2-by-1 type of situations.
And hit it for, you know, $10 or more. Three races that start the card and then the two that end it. We got about 3 minutes, Nick, before Satish joins us. We'll take a break, and Satish will join us at 10:15. I know that QF75 for Clement here is 7-5 in that turf allowance that we're assuming is going to stay on. I thought Red Hornet had a look, the Ann Maya horse.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have any argument at all. I thought that horse's last race was actually very good, and now second off the layoff, I think he merits pretty serious consideration. I'm not altogether certain why that entry is such a short price. I mean, maybe it's a little bit because of just the combo of Arabian Prince and QF75, but they don't exactly look like any great shakes to me at a relatively short price. I'd rather use the horses that were the also rans in the Keeneland race that you just referenced with Red Hornet. I also don't think that horses like Grail or Mr. Tip are really out of the equation either. So I think it's one where, I mean, hopefully weather-wise we're able to stay on the turf here, but I think you want to give yourself some other options without question. I did not dig into the early races terribly much. It looked to me like I wanted to see how Imogene Melvina ran in the first. I thought her maiden win last time out at Keeneland was very solid. I didn't think she had really much in her way, obviously, but I thought she handled her business very well, so I was intrigued by that. And then later on, the 12th and 13th are both excellent races, as you referenced
yes.
earlier. And I thought the 12th, with Society coming back off a layoff now and Steve Asmussen's care, this is a horse that presumably was moved to him with an eye on bigger things down the line. And Wish You Well, who was a very impressive debut winner at Gulfstream when he got a ton of support at the windows, I thought that was a really fun matchup. I'm not sure if there's a huge opportunity wagering-wise, but I do think the two of them look like horses with bright futures. So I'm very intrigued to see how that plays out. And the 13th is a maiden race that looks fun, with a lot of contention there. Looked to me like if Rather Be Lucky can bounce back off a bad effort second time out, but a good effort on debut, then he would be a little interesting. But you got some firsters in there that look like they could be training well. Tab that DRF Clocker report that's available for Friday's card.
Outstanding. And Nick, before I say thank you, and we'll talk tomorrow, I do want to mention in the first race, there is potential to start the whole weekend out with a giant exacta. Park on the Nile for McPeak and Corey Lannery, the 5, and Phil Bauer with Scratch Cat, the 7. And if we can get those two hooked up, it's going to be a nice start to the weekend. But Park on the Nile matched up with Cocktail Moments, who was obviously prepping for the Oaks, and absolutely was... You know, the last time they were together, Park on the Nile had the best of it. So she may be a handful in there, and may have some upside. And I thought Scratch Cat, apparently, you know, she's a little bit of a flighty thing. If they can get her to switch leads, she might actually finish well. But 10-1 and 15-1, the 5 and the 7 to open things up. Nick, I appreciate this. We will reconvene tomorrow to go through Saturday, and we'll try to also get those two-day wagers ironed out for everybody as well.
Sounds great, my friend. Talk to you then. Good luck.
Nick Tamaro, NTAM 1215, the voice of Sam Houston Race Park. Let's take a break here. We're an hour and 15 in. We're doing all right on the scheduling front. When we come back, Satish Sanan joins us for his annual pre-derby, usually on Friday. But I thought, again, I want to try to get as much out ahead to help everybody when they catch up and listen to podcasts, streams, archive, etc. Back to Churchill Downs on Thurby. Still makes me laugh. Satish joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. 4 brand new races to be run at Parks for PA sired, PA bred 2-year-olds. There are 2 $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has 2 more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
'Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org.